How long have you been hearing it, Bill? And have you heard it sound almost identical on more than one brand name, more than one model number of receiver connected to the same antenna? WB2CUK, K2LIW in the TechNet.
WB2CUK, I'll talk a little closer to the mic. Maybe that'll help. I'd say within the last 6 months, I've noticed it. And no, it doesn't matter what receiver. These are old receivers. They're analog tuned. Nothing digital about them. And no matter what antenna I use a little 2-meter whip. I usually use hooked up with it a jack or just a whip antenna that comes on the radio. It's just something that's there. Very annoying. And, at night I like to listen to shortwave and I hear all this garbage on there. It's an indication that the receiver is working and it's picking up, but it's very annoying.
Comment 6.
Go right ahead, Mel.
Yeah, I've experienced the same situation on 75 meters. I've watched the signal on the scope. I have the band sweep scope, one of the old analog scopes, not the new digital types that are basically like a waterfall. This is basically the old type of spectrum display scope on the Collins 7584 receiver. And I see this signal. It's sort of like a ragged signal. I see it moving across the band at times. Sometimes it just hangs on. Certain parts of the band, moving back and forth slowly in certain parts, and then all of a sudden it starts to move up the band. And it'll cry, says, uh-oh, here we go, and it comes right, and when it comes across you, it knocked out your station many times that you're talking to, it's that strong. So I tried with the loop, I tried to get an idea where it's coming from, what direction, and you wouldn't believe something, Dick. I have found it in a number of different directions. Sometimes it seems out of the south, sometimes out of the north, sometimes out of the west. I just can't seem to define exactly what it is, but I have heard the same thing on 75 meters, Dick, over.
He's right, Dick. I have heard it shift up and down, thinking that my receiver's drifting. That's the culprit.
Okay, yeah. Very good, Bill and Mel. Mel, how long have you been hearing it? I think you said it began 6 months ago. By way of your loops, you can do some direction finding. It seems to come from all possible directions. Are you aware of, let me pick a number, within 5 miles of your house, whether or not there's any wideband over power line taking place, any of those trials taking place in your neighborhood, to your knowledge? And Mel first. Go ahead, Mel.
No, we have no BPL here over Con Ed line so far. And where is the nearest BPL? I think it's out before our community island. I believe they were doing something with Loco. They were doing something work on BPL. But I have noticed it now. I think about a year ago, it seemed to be once in a while. Now it seems to be kind of regular. And if you look at it on a scope, it has one slope. This is the funny part of it. One slope of the signal seems to be pretty clean. The other side of the scope of the slope as it comes down, it seems to be sort of ragged. I could say it moves around, considerably enough that it's has no stability really to it. So it's very hard to do an analysis on it. I guess what you really have to do is take digital scope up there and see if I can grab it and see if I can, look into it, take it apart, expand it out, take it apart a little bit to see what the heck it is. But I have built the loop at one time, see if it had something to do with, Faraday rotation as part of it, it moves this way, that way. Nope, not all the time. Like I say, and at times I have peaked it north, sometimes south. It's the goddamnest thing I've ever heard, Dick. I just can't seem to really get a handle on it. But most of the time, he's right. Bill is kind of right that it seems to hang around towards 3900, 3905. It will pass by the lower part of the band, but seems to many times hang off the top, higher end of the bed more than it does seem like it. In other words, it seems to be sort of moving up and down, but stays more up towards the top end of the bed. Dick, over.
And so we
Rich recognized, and I've got another question for Mel, but let's see what Rich has got to say about it. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, I don't know if it's the same thing, but I've noticed a noise on 80, 40, and 20. Fourth band has got a residual 4 or so noise level. When I tune down 14-212, 14-212, I can hear what definitely sound like packets, information packets, computer noise going back and forth. Back to that.
Okay, now, Mel, I've got a theory I'm developing here. Let's see if I can ask you some questions that will help. 80 meters has what I call daily band openings. By that I mean, at nighttime, 80 meters is capable of some very long propagation. At high noon, when the D-layer absorption is real high, 80 meters is quite hard to use. You can talk to the guy in the next town, but beyond that's very difficult. Do you hear the noise at high noon when the band is essentially closed, when D-layer absorption is very high? Back to you, Mel.
You know, listen, right now, I don't hear it. This is another part of it. It is not consistent. It's not consistent at the time of day. It's not consistent as to condition. I have heard it when literally there was little or no activity on the band. And I've heard it when the band was, you know, kind of busy. Many a night, I tune in there because I have schedules on 75 meters. And I usually can tell that we can't make the schedule. You've had a number of days last week. We just couldn't make a schedule with our friends in Pennsylvania because the conditions have been that miserable, that bad. But really, I'm at the bottom of the cycle to the point now that even 75 meters doesn't seem to be really doing too well. I have never heard it on 40 meters. I have never heard it on 20 meters or any other band. I have listened carefully. I thought, you know, that I'd possibly, you know, hear a harmonic of it or whatever. No, nothing at all clean here. Anything here from after 80 meters, I do not hear it on 160. This is another funny thing. It's not on 160. And that's it. It's strictly on 80 meters. Dick, over.
Comment. A person with comment, give us your call letter's name, and then go ahead with your comment.
W2JPW, I've got something on here I just want you to listen to, see if it sounds familiar to you. Just a second. That's on 22 megahertz, 22.493 megahertz on sideband position, but you hear it on AM, doesn't matter, but it's more sync, the receiver in the sideband mode. Does it sound like that, Dick? Go ahead.
Okay, Lou, that signal that Lou just played to you, is that at all like what you hear? Mel first, go ahead, Mel.
Oh, this one has more. This one is not as much as a noise as it is a, can't even call it a tone. I call it a wobble. It's got some kind of whoosh-whoosh to it. I'm trying to, I got 75 meters on just the spike is not there.
So the leakage from the connectors from the one of the cable television channels happen to be on the same frequency that we use could be considerably annoying. Also, a number of cable systems use frequencies that are also used by the FAA for aircraft communication and navigation and so on. As such, you and I could go driving up and down the town looking for leaky connectors that were not installed correctly or somebody did something improper in the house. So they're radiating some of the signal that's intended for the television set. And we'd hear some weak signals on a couple of different blocks as we drive up and down the town. And because all of those signals that are flowing down the cable system are all on the exact same frequency, all coherent, in phase with each other, that signal is flowing down every one of those cables at essentially the same period of time, except for a few nanoseconds of delay because one cable length is longer than the other. But as such, you fly your airplane over the town, And unless every one of those connectors is tight, you're going to hear a huge amount of signal. And the FAA has been hit with this problem. They've come up with something called the CLI, Cumulative Leakage Index. And as such, a good aircraft with the right kind of instrumentation on board can measure what is the cumulative leakage index of that particular town, summing together all of those connectors at once, because you see them all at once. And as such, you can come up with a significant number of microvolts per meter or milliwatts per square centimeter, whatever units you want to use for power flux density or field intensity measurement. You can come up with a pretty fierce number unless your whole darn cable system is quite tight and being well maintained. All right, so that's how it can happen with cable TV. Now, even if your and my community doesn't have broadband over power line, BPL, there could be a community 100 miles away, 1,000 miles away, where the whole darn community is running a test for a BPL, and because of the way 80-meter band can open up and the way the ionosphere can extremely favor signals, it could be the equivalent of flying an airplane over the town. In other words, the whole darn town cumulative leakage index from their BPL could go against the ionosphere on a good day, come into your town, even though it's coming from a long distance away, and give you a hell of a lot of grief. I see the possibility of that. I wonder if it sounds possible to you, Mel. K2KEY, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, I got it right now. I saw it out at 3905. Now, let me see if I can calculate it before it takes off again, wait. Okay, listen to it. At 3922.8 right now. Do you hear that, Dick? Over.
Very well. 3922.8 is where you're getting that one. And that sounds to me like it could be the marker frequency, the pilot tone for a system that's capable of transmitting data. And you found one particular tone, and I'm getting the impression that Bill is hearing multiple tones. As he tunes his receiver, you hear one tone going down, another tone going up, so to speak, as he tunes across all those tones. Bill, what you just heard coming from Mel's house, does that have any of the characteristics similar to what you hear? WB2C UK, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah,
WB2C UK,
that's exactly it. And I'm tuning with receivers that I can one band go from, say, 2 to 8 megahertz, and I get it all over like a comb. Like I rub a comb across the speaker, I hear these pulses, and that's what it is. So if you tune it in and put a VFO on it, that's exactly what it is. I understand they're doing BPL testing out in Hopard, but I would think in Hopard it would be a lot stronger. It isn't that terribly strong. On some stations, on some spots, it's NS9, others S2, but it's Mel was saying, it's very erratic. You know, nothing predictable about it, except that it's there.
Dick, what frequency are you hearing it on now? Because I am not hearing it in Rockaway. I'm going to look for it.
He said 39.22.8. Is that true, Mel?
It just moved up to 39.23.3 now. Let me, there it goes again. All right, hold on. Yeah, it moved up a little bit again. Yeah, it changes. You hear it, the tone, it's not constant, and now it's got a different sound to it. Wait a minute. Now, its signal strength went down. It's down to S4 now. It was up to about S7. Here, listen to it now. 39.23.3 now. Just listen. You hear the way the tone has changed. I wonder if you can hear that, Barry. Over.
Yeah, now I can. It's coming in much better horizontal and vertical. I don't know if that helps any. And right now I got it at 39.37. About 39.37 in a fraction.
Hey, let me look at 39.37. Gee, okay, let's see if I get it there too. Hold on. 3937, okay.
Nope.
Nothing. I haven't got it here at 3937. I got it at 3923. Figure this one out, Dick.
I got it here in Whitestone.
What frequency are you hearing it, Rich?
3936.6.
Okay. I've got another guess as to what could be going on. Nevis. If you're doing a aircraft overflight of a town, and you're looking down at the cable system, you're looking at all those connectors at once. Boy, you can get a whopper of a signal. Even though driving up and down the block, you're only going to hear one or two connectors at a time, and you're not going to hear much of a signal. 80 meters quite often will supply the right amount of ionospheric ionization level, such that a near vertical incident signal, in other words, an antenna that aims a signal straight up, like putting a dipole too close to the ground, aims the signal straight up in the air, bounces off the ionosphere and comes back down. So the possibility exists that by way of ionospheric reflection, that you would be hearing the whole darn town all at once, as if you were flying at the 60 kilometers above the town, because that's where the ionosphere is, 60 kilometers up, or at least the ERF layer is up there. Some of the other layers are down a little bit lower, but I'm seeing the possibility that your power lines, your BPL, if that's what it is, that's a speculation right now, that it could be a BPL test. It may not be in your town, but still, by way of Nevis reflection of the ionosphere, you could be looking at a whole town all at once. Each one of us, depending on the state of the ionosphere and the orientation of our antenna, is going to favor a different town. But I think there are multiple towns where experiments is going on. Hopog, I believe, is one of the towns. Or is it Yaphank? And to get a signal to reflect near vertical incidence straight up to the ionosphere and back down into Whitestone, right down into Far Rockaway, right down into Manhattan Beach. That's a speculation that you guys could be hearing the signal from BPL, even though BPL is not going on in your town. Wonder if anyone's got any comments on this. If so, give me your call letters right now.
K2R2N.
Dick, how strong is everybody hearing it in comparison to the other signals on the band? Because it's not very strong here. I'm picking it up, but honestly, if I didn't know to look for it, it's weak enough so I would probably never notice it.
Not loud here either.
No. I'm here in New Jersey.
Okay, so New Jersey's not getting it. Weekly in Whitestone, weekly in Far Rockaway. Mel, what's your guess as to how strong?
NWS2M, we don't get it here.
Now it's gone. I'm just looking. I don't know where it went to. There it was. It was there. Barry is hearing it up there at 37. I'm hearing it where it was hearing it down at around 24. How do you count these different frequencies, Dick? Over.
I've got it right now at 3936.
BB2BXO.
I'm thinking we're all hearing different stuff, because I'm still hearing that signal on 3937.
I think it's a whole comb of frequencies, and which comb is the loudest at your particular QTH is going to be different. It's not a frequency accuracy problem. You guys are all listening to the same kind of a signal, but different tones of it, is my guess. Who is the person who just checked in?
BB2BXO.
Yeah, BXO, go ahead and tell us what you see.
Hey, unfortunately, I do not have an HF receiver here. I'd love to listen also. But my comment was, maybe somebody will remember or be able to find it quickly, is that I believe there is a website with samples of various kinds of digital signals and various kinds of intruder signals. I'm not sure whether ARRL Intruder Watch does it or another ham is doing it privately, but I vaguely remember reading about something like that QST a couple of months ago. Go ahead.
Okay, I think there's a way we can do a little bit of selectivity here. When you've got high noon D-layer absorption, my experience with 80 meters tells me you can barely get the signal to go to the next town. of the Mesa Band seems to be dead. So if BPL was going on in your town, then even at high noon with a lot of D-layer absorption, there's a good chance you're going to hear it. If you're getting it by near vertical incident sky wave, reflection off the ionosphere, then only when the ionosphere is clear to you, in other words, far away from noontime, so to speak, after dusk and before dawn, is when you're going to be hearing it. So I hope some of you guys will start keeping records as to when you hear it and when you don't hear it. And you got to tune quite a bit of the band because it obviously drifts around. Now, the way that you guys can hear different frequencies and the fact that Bill tells us he hears a whole comb line, in other words, there are times he hears across the band, he's hearing multiple carriers with that crazy sound. I think BPL has multiple carriers to it, the digital light signal, multiple carriers, and which particular carrier in your particular antenna is going to be the strongest today is very similar to what Mel is experiencing when he talks to his buddy in Pennsylvania. He's got the loop antenna in the house, and as he orients the loop antenna in various azimuths, various elevations, at various polarizations, he can pick up that particular signal. On 80 meters, we got a tremendous amount of multipath. The signal is bouncing off the ionosphere in various ways, coming into your particular antenna that's got the certain orientations, and therefore, which one of those multiple tones is going to be the loudest one to you is going to change as a function of time, and occasionally, you guys are going to hear the exact same tone, the exact same frequency, but a slightly different signal strength. But I think some of you guys are going to be hearing different tones as the strongest tone at different periods of time. That's my speculation. So now let's start gathering records and see what's going on and see if we can correlate it. And one beautiful correlation would be at a time when it's good and strong, if we believe a candidate could be the Yaphank BPL test and someone then drove his automobile with a good receiver into Yaphank, and see if you hear that exact carrier tone and with a similar characteristic, that would be a beautiful feedback. I'm sure you guys have got all kinds of comments on this. So let me turn it to Bill first. He's the guy who started this all off. Bill, look what you started. Maybe B2CUK for some comments, then we're going to pick up a little bit of everyone else. K2I, Governor TechNet. You got it, Bill.
All right, Dick. Yeah, what a can of worms I opened up. All right. Well, it is, at least I'm not crazy. I don't have bad receivers that I've been playing with. And that's what I had thought. I have a couple of nice digital and analog receivers I can put in the car. And one day, when I have nothing to do, then you ride out there. It might be interesting. But, yeah, that was my first thought, was BPL. And, you know, it's not really much of a shortwave listener, but... when I tune across the band and I hear all this stuff, I get very suspicious. I was also going to say maybe you saw the movie, what was that movie? Independence Day. But nah, I don't think it did. I don't think it's a matter of space. Dick, I'm going to sign. I'm on the parkway and you got a lot of guys here with good ideas. I'm going to sign. And when I get home, I'll put your net on and I'm going to tune around in the low bands also. If I hear something unusual, I'll chime into the net. But for now, I'm going to sign. 373, so we're on our way back to the Hampton and Mullican Hill, which was very nice. More old receivers and transmitters than I've seen in many a Hampton. A lot of old Hamelins and Hitchkin stuff, which is pretty interesting. I wish I had an empty basement to store all this stuff. 73, Dick, we'll catch you later. WCUK, we'll be clear, but I'll be listening.
Very fine, Bill. Thank you for bringing us this question. Let me ask you one final question, though, Bill. Have you ever heard the noise at high noon, or do you only hear it during the time that 80 meters is sort of open, so to speak? Back to you, Bill.
All different times. A lot of times I'll be playing with these radios at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and, you know, 11 in the morning, and I'll hear it maybe different parts of the band, but it's always there. There's always something there. I think because I'm, you know, I'm in Eastern Nassau, and that's not too far from Hop Park. I'm not that... I'm a stone's throw away, so there may be more than ionospheric. I may be getting just ground waves to it. As you know, a power line would make an excellent radiator. You didn't know that. Back to you.
Interesting. Does anyone know what town is the trial taking place? Oh, I've heard Hop Hog. I've heard Yap Hank, which one of the towns do we happen to know is this trial of DPL taking place? Anyone got any direct knowledge on that?
Apog, W2PNJ.
Okay, and just like Bill said, Apog is the next town over from him. Stone's Throw, it's within his ground wave. So that would explain why he can hear it at high noon. Any of the other guys who have heard it, have any of you guys heard it at high noon? If so, give me a feedback right now.
I have feedback.
Go right ahead.
W2JPW. It's not only on 80 meters. I've heard it's very familiar. I've heard it on 17 and 15. In fact, it drives me nuts. There's one of them on 17, usually gets on a frequency I want to work. It's very, very familiar. So that has spared us from that misery. So that's my comment, Dick. We have it here on the higher frequencies. Go ahead.
Lou, you're in Allendale, New Jersey. If any BPL trials are going on, do you happen to know, are there any trials going away 2 towns away or 20 towns away? Is there any trials you're aware of going on anywhere in the state of New Jersey? Back to you, Lou.
I really haven't checked into it. I've read some of the stuff in QSC. I'm not aware that there is, but I could be ignorant of this. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, anyone else have any comments on observations, speculations? What have they seen? When have you heard it? And so on. Give me your call letters right now.
WS2N.
Paul, I keep forgetting to get to you. Paul, go right ahead.
I'm probably about 10 miles away. I don't hear anything. I was going up and down a band. I couldn't hear that at all. And as far as Hot Dog goes, yeah, I don't know if they're doing it 24 hours a day or if they're doing it at all, but I've never heard any interference from these BPLs. So far, anyway, Dick. That's it.
Just basically, Mark.
Go ahead, Mel.
Okay, right now it's at 33.682.2, and it's about F7. No, it went down now to F6. It was F8, and there it is. Listen to it. That's it. And now it's moved again, and now it's clear, the rest of the band is clear. I scanned over the rest of the band, and it's sitting on 33.686.5 now, over.
I still got it at 39.36.
Okay, is there any kind of consumer electronics that we know of that has a local oscillator that's free-running that can be drifting around? Back in the old days, you occasionally would hear the local oscillator of television sets. Occasionally you would hear a cordless telephone. You would hear people's local oscillator being radiated by a scanner receiver. Almost all of these things now, with the new FCC rules for unintended emissions, are much more controlled, and a lot of it has gone away. But are there any consumer electronics that we know of? Because the thing I'm having trouble with is the drifting of the signal. Although I guess it's possible that BPL, in its inexpensive form, could have some form of master oscillator, so to speak, that is not crystal controlled, because that would make it more expensive. It could be a free-running oscillator. Anybody got any speculation on that? Give me your call letters right now.
Julio.
Rich recognized. Anyone else?
This is K2KY. Then why can't I find, if it's coming from a piece of consumer electronics, wouldn't I be able to spot it in a certain direction, Dick? Over.
I hear you. And that's making it difficult. The fact that you're the one guy that on 80 meters has direction finding capability, and I think you're saying at various times it's coming from various directions. Let's see what Rich has got to say. N2EL, go ahead.
I'm wondering, Dick, if it might be some form of over-the-horizon radar, which might account for why Mel can't pick it up, is getting it in all directions, backscattering. The old system that the Soviet Union used to use would walk around from one frequency to another, sounded unstable. I think I heard somewhere we have some type of over-the-horizon radar. Now I wonder if that's
to be it. That's an interesting speculation. Radars and the so-called woodpecker, in the past, radars had a very specific pulse rep rate, pulse duration, and so on, a characteristic sound, and I know what a radar sounds like. I've been living with them for years. The sound that you guys are playing me doesn't sound like a radar. I didn't say it's not. I'm just saying it doesn't sound like a radar. There are some very modern kinds of radars that use a pseudo-random code, which is a kind of a nearly continuous wave transmission, and with the right kind of equipment, it doesn't require a whole lot of power, but because your duty factor is so high, and the pseudo-random code has got a correlation to it, you can use it for direction finding, distance measuring, and so on, target identification. So there's a flare possibility. It's one of these very modern pieces of equipment. I'm having trouble with that one. But I guess the best we can do is to keep gathering data. Who hears it on what frequency, at what time of day, what days of the week? Are there multiple carriers? If you tune across all of 80 meters, can you find it in five different places or only one place? It's got a characteristic sound to it. We've now heard that sound play to us. I think the best we can do is to keep gathering data. A candidate is BPL, broadband over power line, but there's lots of other candidates of possible consumer electronics. Even a slim possibility of some very popular brand of a babysitter monitor type electronic. I doubt it, but it's possible. Anyone else have any further comments? Give me your call letters right now.
And 2MB.
Barry recognized. Anyone else?
W2TTT.
Whiskey 2, triple tango. Okay. Barry first. Go ahead, Barry.
Okay. Well, good. I'm thinking that the noise that I'm hearing is not the same one that Mel is hearing. It might be the same one that Richie's hearing. I'm picking up something on 37.44. It's kind of steady. I lose it every now and then because it's not strong. And if another signal comes on, it's gone. But it's digital noise, but it's not moving around. And I think it's the one that Richie's hearing, but I really don't think it's the one that Mel's hearing.
Now, I'm speculating there are multiple tones to it, and which tone you get during what time of the day is the loudest at your QTH could be a different tone. Because I think if it is BPL, I guarantee there isn't just one carrier. It's a whole lot of individual carriers, is my speculation. And whether it be code division multiple access, frequency division multiple access, whether it be 16 QAM, there's a zillion different kinds of protocols that can be used for transmitting broadband data, with and without error correcting, the Turby coding, and so on. So there could be multiple carriers that can be heard, but it does have a digital characteristic that I've heard before. Gordon, what do you hear over there in Bergenfield? Whiskey 2, triple tango, K2RIW on the TechNet.
Yeah, good evening, Dick. Well, I'm not hearing anything right now because I'm riding around on my mobile, but a couple of things come to mind. One is, if there's a coma frequencies, it's going to have an effect of essentially raising the overall noise floor, and you know, God only knows what the harmonic relationships are and what kind of products that'll produce. Having said that, I actually asked that a similar question to this of colleagues. I work for a certain phone company that is doing something Fios-like, but not necessarily not necessarily requiring fiber, although it may at times. And flat out, there's a notch in the handband, period. I mean, flat, end of story, end of discussion. I don't understand, first, why that's not happening with BPL, and second, you know, why that's good enough, but that's a whole other matter. I mean, if we're, you know, if we're producing all sorts of radius garbage in the spectrum, then, you know, it's a real mess, and it's going to make other services' lives more complex. I mean, look at what's happening with some of the other Part 15 bands. It's pretty nasty. You know, like, 2.4, et cetera, and 900, I mean, my lord. They're becoming. So anyway, I just wanted to add that little bit, and I will keep a look for it. I made notes of these frequencies and the qualities you've described.
K2RW,
W2TPT.
Okay, I think the best we can do, Wolf, is just keep gathering data and keep a logbook on it. I heard it on this frequency at this time at this signal strength. And so keeping logbook could be very handy in helping to pin down what's going on. When it comes to notching out the handbands, those are beautiful sounding words, Gordon, but those are relativistic words. If money was no object and you give me a whole lot of volume and you allow me to put 39 poles in a filter, I can give you a stop band filter on each one of the handbands, which will notch out the handbands by 100 dB. Obviously, that would be expensive, voluminous, difficult to keep it weatherproof, and so on. So whatever they're using as a notch filter, the word notch is very relative. Is it a 20 dB notch? Is it a 40 dB notch? Is the notch nice and deep in the middle of the 40 meter band, but at the edges of the band, the notch is not so deep? Picture having a whole lot of individual amplifiers along the power line, because my guess is that you need a number of booster amplifiers per mile on a BPL system in order to keep the signal above threshold and keep reconstituting it. And so are each one of those amplifiers going to be having filters? You rapidly see how this can get into a logistics problem, a cost problem, a volume problem, and therefore I think the notching is going to be mediocre. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm a little worried about the handband notching is going to be mediocre. And are you going to notch up every one of the handbands, 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10, plus all the walk bands at 6 meters, at 2 meters, 220, 440, and so on? How far do you go? When do you stop? And are we also notching out the 160-meter band? So we have more questions than we've got answers. But let's just keep an eye on this one. And groups like this can share the data and keep gathering it and find out what it all comes to. We'll eventually come to a conclusion on all this. Right now, BPL is a strong candidate. It's not the only candidate. Anyone else want to add anything to all this? Give me a call at us right now. K2LIW on the TechNet. Okay, looks like we've sort of covered that subject for tonight. We will be back. I'll be back, as Donald will say. Hey, Bob, what's going on over there in Kings Park Spa? W2PNJ, K2LIW on the TechNet.
Good evening, everybody on the net. I purchased a inverted B antenna. I want to get on the 40, 80, and 160 meter bands. It's a alpha delta item. The center fed antenna, it has an aluminum plate like 2 inches wide, about 4 inches long. It has the coax connected through the plate and the two insulators, and the center conductor feeds both the left, the both elements of the wire antenna. They tell you if you're not installing it on a tower, which I am not, I'm going to be installing it with an L bracket about 35, 40 feet up in a tree. I'm going to screw it to the trunk of the tree, quite large tree. They tell me to run a ground wire down from that aluminum plate, so I got a number 6 copper bear to an 8-foot ground rod. I'm going to install that wire through the trunk of the tree with Romex staples, which have an insulated jacket that keeps the galvanic action down between the steel and the copper. Secure the wire, bare number 6, to the trunk. And what I want to do is then gently tie wrap the coax, the RG8, to that ground wire. Am I going to have a problem with coupling to that ground wire and giving me a high BSWR? I just want to know what the feedback is on that. W2PNJ, K2RW.
Okay, when you put that ground rod in there, which is being recommended by the inverted V manufacturer, Alpha Delta, he's doing that primarily for liability risk reasons. If that antenna was one of the very few antennas that truly gets struck with lightning and it created equipment damage in the shack, and you sued them, they want to, of course, say, did you do a proper grounding job? and if not, they're off the hook. When you put that grounding rod in that you're doing, in my opinion, Bob, what you're doing is belt and suspenders. In other words, I don't think you really need it. I put all kinds of antennas in various places in my yard, sometimes on the tower, sometimes not on the tower, and I haven't worried about grounding. And I live on a high piece of land, and so you would think I'd be struck very often. And there was one lightning strike one day, but it was the 110-volt line that got struck, and the damage that I suffered in my house came into the 110-volt line, not from my ham radio antennas. So the grounding wire changing the impedance and the VISRA of the antenna, rather unlikely, particularly if at the feed point of the antenna you have something like a W2AU or some other brand name of real balancing device. When you take a piece of coax cable and you feed a dipole-like antenna, you can take the center conductor to go to one half of the dipole and the shield to go to the other half. It's not ideal, but it does work. The next step is a poor man's balance where you take a few turns of the coax cable and wrap it up. I'm trying to think now which article did I see on that one. There's a couple of very good articles describing how to make a simple coax balance by wrapping a few turns and taping them together near the antenna. That's the next step. The third and the best step is a real balance where if you look inside, it's got a bunch of ferrite toroids that are around the coax cable, shielding putting an RF choke is what it's really doing, on the outer braid of the coax cable, stopping any signal to flow back down. See, a dipole is a symmetric antenna. If at one instant of time, the right-hand side of your dipole is plus 50 volts, Mother Nature would like to see the left-hand side of the dipole minus 50 volts at that exact same instant of time. And half a cycle later, the polarity is reversed. But Mother Nature likes the dipole to be thoroughly balanced. Therefore, even though you've got the best brand name of coax in the world, if you simply connect the shield of the coax to one half the dipole, the dipole itself will launch a signal that goes back down the outside of the shield of your coax. And therefore, the coax becomes a radiator, and it affects the visor a little bit, and you might have some RF in the shack from that. But by putting the right kind of a balun, whether it be a poor man's balun of coax cable looped together, or a real alpha-delta-like device, and there's many other brands, that's an improvement. It's not mandatory. It's not going to explode if you don't do that. But the whole system works a little bit better, a little bit more predictable if you do. With that balance, if that stops any RF energy from flowing down the outside of the coax, and as the coax comes down the shield, if you do or don't connect it to the your number 6 gauge grounding rod system, then it no longer matters. There's no RF energy on that coax with the proper balance. I think even without the proper balance, the difference we're talking about would be very minor. In other words, if you did the experiment 98% of the time, I think you would find that the antenna has a natural VISRA of 1.4, and you then connect the outer shield to the coax without a balance to your grounding rod, and the VISRA might go to 1.5 or 1.3. A minor change is what I think you're going to have. So I wouldn't lose a lot of sleep over this one, Bob. However, a couple of very simple experiments will confirm or deny. But if you really want to be thorough with that grounding rod, as the manufacturer Alpha Delta is recommending, then your piece of 6-gauge wire is going to go to an 8-foot-long rod with 5/8 diameter made out of galvanized steel or copper, sunk into the ground below grade with the clamp below grade where the 6-gauge wire connects to it. That's a EIA standard earth grounding system. W2PNJ, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Dick, the part of the instructions is they wanted me to make a 8-inch diameter, 8 turns of the coax ray right by that junction. And on this antenna, the outer jacket does not go to either the left or the right lead of the dipole. Both leads are connected to the center conductor. And they say that it's essential to run this wire down if I'm not using a metallic support because it depends if I put it forms part of the antenna system, this ground wire.
Okay. This is an unusual sounding dipole, inverted V dipole that you're describing to us, Bob. If the left side, let's assume now that you set up the dipole north-south. So half the dipole is going toward north and half the dipole is going toward the south. and you make it sound like the semiconductor is connected to both halves of the dipole simultaneously, directly from ConEd or directly from LIPA, and directly rectifies it. And when you put a full rectifier on a 120-volt line, because the sine wave is 120 volts of RMS, equivalent heating power, but it has a peak voltage of 167 volts, that rectifier gives you something close to 167 volts. There's a couple of disadvantages here, but you've got a ridiculous starting current, you've got a great big capacitor that's running at 167 volts DC, that in turn goes into the switching power supply. If you want to make an extremely inexpensive switching power supply, and you want to regulate down to, let's say, 12 volts or 24 volts, the kinds of switching power supplies are called boost, buck, or boost buck. This is a bucking power supply. That is to say, 167 volts goes in, we'll say 13 volts comes out, and how do you do that? One simple inductor can do it. You flip the transistor onto the inductor, and you charge it with 167 volts for some period of time. Then you open up the transistor, the inductor gives you an inductive kickback, that inductive kickback goes into a separate rectifier, into a capacitor, and when it reaches 13 volts, you start limiting the pulse duration of the time that you pour current into the inductor. That's a bucking-type power supply. One simple inductor, a smart switching transistor, a filter capacitor on the output, a very, very simple network. That kind of simple inductor type, absolutely positively, cannot be put in series because they have a common ground. The 110-volt line you and I get from local or LIPA really isn't two floating wires with 120 volts between them. One of those wires is essentially grounded. Yes, there really is a third wire.